Hey guys, this is David Avalon with the Breaking the Guard podcast. Before we get started, I just wanted to remind you all to check out davidmma.com. That is my new website where I've been posting all of my technique videos, philosophy videos, articles covering all sorts of topics from diet, nutrition, fitness, news, etc. We also have new courses there. We just finished filming the Head Inside Single Leg series. And we also did some MMA takedowns. And you can check out the site by going to davidmma.com. And you can register for a free account, which gives you access to four courses for free and a bunch of the articles and videos. So go ahead and visit davidmma.com right now and start learning. Hello and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Guard. I'm your host, David Avalon, and let's go over some of the news items today. One of them I wanted to cover is the Who's Number 123 card, okay, which is going to be on Flow Grappling, and that's on May 10th. Some interesting matchups that they have going on. They've switched up some of the matches just because I believe some people got injured. But main event, Nicholas Merigali versus Wagner Rocha. It's an interesting matchup. On paper, it looks like it should be pretty straightforward victory for Merigali. However, you can't sleep on the dog that is Rocha. He's been in the game for a really long time. I remember him competing in grappling tournaments I was hosting back like in 1999, 2000, early era. So, I mean, he's been in for a really long time. Very seasoned competitor. Probably one of the guys with the most experience in no-gi grappling, really, when I come to think of it. And he's shown he's still sharp. He beat Merigali's teammate, Luke, not too long ago, pretty soundly, too. So he understands strategy and tactics. So I'm imagining he's not going to go into a straight firefight with Merigali. I think that would be an easy win. But if he was able to play more tactically and try to use the rule set to win a decision or, you know, even, you know, take the back or whatnot, he can definitely make something like that happen. So interesting matchup. I definitely lean on Merigali, of course. But again, it depends on how Rocha approaches the match. But I know he's a smart competitor, so I think he'll play tactically and try to drag this out to give himself the best odds of winning. Now, the next match, also very interesting, it was supposed to be Mika Galvao versus Tommy Langacker. Mika got injured, so now Andrew Tackett jumps in. So he just won AACC West Coast Trials in great fashion, and now he's getting a nice matchup with Tommy Langacker. That should be a very interesting matchup. I'm going to go for Tackett on that one. He's been on fire, and I really like his style. Next matchup, also really nice, Felipe Pena and Rafael Lovato Jr. This is interesting. You would have, you know, like Lovato and Wagner Rocha, I think would be a great age-appropriate matchup. And you might have even flipped having Pena and Merigali, right? But Felipe Pena and Lovato is interesting. Lovato, you know, didn't look too great against Craig, but then again, I felt like the leg lock game has always been an issue for Lovato, and Craig obviously is a master of it. So I think that created that mismatch. With Pena, I don't see leg locks being that much of a threat, although he certainly can do them. It'll be interesting to see if he just tries to repeat the game plan, or is he going to play more of his game? I definitely think Pena has the edge here, of course. But again, it depends on how Lovato approaches this as well. But I think Felipe Pena is, you know, even though he's hasn't looked super great recently, he's a very tough competitor. And he's only looked, you know, mediocre when you put him against someone like Gordon Ryan, who's a superstar. The next matchup, another good matchup, JT Torres, Nicky Ryan. We haven't seen much from JT in a while, at least I haven't. But
JT has tremendous pressure and pacing, very good passing and good sweeps. Going against Nicky Ryan is a very interesting matchup. I would definitely like to see that one. Again, who I favor on this one, I'll probably say JT. He's a very good competitor as well, seasoned. Nicky had some, you know, setbacks in recent matches, just being outsized in some of them or just being beat tactically. Again, JT is another guy who plays smart. So I think it will definitely lean towards him. We have a couple more matchups. Jasmine Rocha versus Emily Ferreira. I don't know too much about Emily, so I can't really say too much about that match. Jasmine obviously coming off her ACC trials win, looks to be in good position. And then the final match, Diego Reyes and Shea Montague. I don't know much about Shea either, so I can't really comment on that. No, Diego is legit, so I would probably lean on him. But this is a pretty solid who's number one card. A lot of top competitors here, particularly those last four matches, to me are all very exciting matchups that I definitely want to check out. Another grappling news, we had both of the Rotula brothers compete at 1FC, and against much better competition, and both of them ended up hitting arm inside, rear naked chokes, or really behind a back mounted darce choke, which is phenomenal. Like, I can't imagine the high it must be to win with your brother at that level with the same submission. And it's clearly a submission that works best for the builds. Again, usually darce strokes are great for guys with long arms. Me being kind of like a T-Rex, it's always struggle to get a darce. If I got luck a darce on you, it's usually it's a death sentence. Because that means it's super tight. But this setup that they both used was very clever. If you go and watch them, basically, they got to the back mount. And one of them hit a beautiful switch into a hip bump. Love to see it. That ended up becoming a mount. And then I think it's transitioned to the back mount from there. But basically from the back, the opponent was somewhat defending the choke by going high, you know. And when they went high here, they just used this as the underhook arm to then cinch the darce from here. Again, very clever. It's not new, but still not very well used. And I think a lot of people also don't understand. I've seen people try to do this when the guy's arm is down. And like that won't work, right? Because you don't have to choke on this side. So like the key that I think, at least for me, made that a lot more obvious of how that works well is that the arm has to be high. So when they start locking up that darce, boom, now it's flush. And now you got that shoulder to neck connection that is going to help facilitate the choke. But they both hit it beautifully. Something to definitely keep your eye out if you're going against a long arm bandit. You know, I was trying it the other day and I couldn't make the grip. The arms, I could get the figure four, but I couldn't get the hand behind the head because I just had no room. I might have to work on it a little bit more to see if I can get there, because that's a really nice setup, you know, very clever. So hats off to both of those brothers and congrats. Now, one thing I wanted to talk about is that while defending things or evading threats is good, it is always better to counter, right? This should be intuitive, especially if you come from striking, where if I slip a jab or, you know, I slip a cross, it's great. But if that's all I did, I only prevented damage and maybe made my opponent expend themselves. What you really want to be able to do is to counter, right? Where if I slip a jab and then throw a right cross, or, you know, slip the jab and then throw a rear uppercut at the same time, now, not only am I getting out of the way, I'm also doing damage. And usually when you counter, the damage is much more, because in this case, he's moving forward to the strike and then I'm evading and then coming back into him. So now we're creating a strong collision, right? Where for striking, you're going to create the most damage in those types of situations versus if I throw a strike while the guy's backing away, you know, it doesn't really do as much because he's already moving with the blow, right? But this applies to grappling as well. If I'm just focusing on defending, let's say, leg locks, that's okay, right? Like, it's better than not defending them. But what would be better is to be able to counter the leg locks with a very offensive approach. Now, the issue usually is that countering is more difficult. It requires, one, knowing the right counter to use and the technique. And then two, there's going to be a timing issue, right? Like, you can't just counter somebody at will, right? You need the setup, right? And the setup is them doing the move to you. So then you could counter it at the right time. Again, striking is a little easier to visualize. You know, if a guy throws a jab and I counter too late, that's basically going to mean either I got hit because I didn't evade the punch in time, or when I slipped, I took too long to fire, right? And then he already recovered from his missed strike. So usually it's a combination of having the right counter to use and having the timing, and also hand-eye coordination, being able to react quick enough to be able to get in and out with your counter. But a lot of times I feel like people, if you focus on a very defensive-based game, you're only preserving yourself and doing minimal damage to your opponent. I say minimal because if they waste a lot of energy trying to attack you, and let's say we're doing a wrestling counter game where I'm just, or defensive game where I'm just sprawling, just defending a lot of takedowns is going to net me a stamina win, right? I use less energy defending a shot than a guy will use trying to take the shot, right? So you, in that sense, you can do some damage, right? Like if a guy just goes hard on the takedowns, I'm just sprawling, defending, he will wear himself out, and then now I can win easier. But what's better than just defending in most cases is to be able to counter. Guy shoots a double leg, I hit him with a switch, boom, and I reverse him. Now I'm already in the positive position. Okay, but again, takes timing, takes good reactions, good technique. But if you invest, so you definitely have to invest time in defense and learning how to defend, because it's not realistic to be able to counter every move, right? Just like I can't expect to slip and counter every jab, cross, or hook. It's just most of us don't have the type of speed and reaction time to be able to anticipate and read every strike coming in. And not only to get out of the way, but be able to rip the counter immediately is tough. But so you need defense, right? But if you build enough reaction time, and that usually comes through training, right? Then I can have moments where I can rip counters, especially when I could see somebody develops a pattern, right? For example, again, I use striking because it's very easy to visualize. If I get into a fight with somebody and we're, you know, sizing each other up, and he starts throwing a jab at a regular tempo, then I know, okay, this is how he throws his jab. So the first few jabs, I might not slip. I might just block or parry, you know, catch. And then, okay, now I got his timing, and maybe he has a tell. He steps into every jab he throws. So I can read that now when he slips, when he strikes, rather. I can go into a slip and then counter with a rear uppercut, or counter with a right cross left hook. And I once I got his timing down, that becomes easier to counter. But those first few, I'm going to be cautious because maybe he's going jab right immediately or jab lead hook. And if I didn't get a good read on it, I might get caught while trying to do my counter, right? Because I haven't chosen the proper counter. So, you know, in MMA and grappling context, it's the same, right? I might defend the first couple takedowns or defend the first couple submission holds. And then once I get a good read, then I go into counter mode, right? Where now I can counter viciously because I know that I've read his pattern. And particularly when you have tape on an opponent, this gives you a little more advanced intel where I could have counters in advance, right? Like, for example, I was telling you, if I was Lovato and I'm going against Craig Jones, I'm watching those early matches, I'm seeing, okay, this guy is going to use a Z-guard and he's going to, you know, go into an inversion to get into an Ashi or to a saddle, right? So I have to have a counter game set up for that, you know, which a lot of people now are doing the Ashi bolos or whatnot. But that comes through training and drilling and putting yourself in these situations and reacting accordingly, right? So countering doesn't normally happen magically. Like, it's just like anything else, you have to prepare. And good ways of doing this for drilling is having your opponent go, the one thing I would say that, again, striking context, easy to understand. If I expect to build hand-eye coordination about slipping a jab and countering with a right cross, and just having my opponent throw at the same tempo, like we're just standing in front of each other and he's just doing this. One. You're not doing anything here. This is a useless drill. And you can see people do this all the time, especially when you're feeding pads sometime and you get into a rhythm, you pa-pa, and then you throw and then they slip and they throw the right. And you won't even throw the strike sometimes and your partner's already doing the slip because he's anticipated it, right? That's not good because we're trying to build reaction time. So you shouldn't be throwing at the same tempo from the same direction all the time. You want each read to be organic, right? But it doesn't happen if you're drilling like a robot that's programmed, okay, every 5 seconds, throw this left jab, you know, because then we're patterning machines. Your partner is then going to learn, okay, I can even have my eyes closed. I just wait 5 seconds and then I slip and it's going to happen. So you need to be moving around, shifting, and changing the location of the punches so that your partner keeps getting a positive read. So if you're doing grappling, it's going to be kind of the same, where rather than just, okay, start from a standing position, I'm going to go into this Ashi, and then it takes about 10 seconds, and we're going to repeat this pattern. It's got to be a little more organic, right? If you want to get that read, where maybe he doesn't always go for the move that you're trying to counter. So you have to defend appropriately. And then he'll just whip it out of nowhere, and that's when you have to be able to react, right? If you're trying to build reaction time, that's how it's going to be done. So it can't be just a flat, monotonous drill session. It has to be a little bit more organic so that, again, your brain is firing, your eyes are focused to read the appropriate technique so that you can get the right counter for it. So that's my take anyways. Like, you know, a lot of people say, defense is important. It is, but I think on a higher level, countering is more important because at a higher level, if you just defend, it's not going to be enough. And people rarely give themselves a lot of room from mistakes, right? So being able to counter is crucial because it's going to give you the edge you're going to need to get an upper hand on an opponent, right? By utilizing their force against them, which is, again, just such a martial arts principle. That's how you're going to be able to get an edge rather than just blindly shooting in or trying to set yourself up into an entry. It could be harder. Because like I said, that guy could be defensive and nullify all your offense. But if you could take advantage of one of his offensive moves to make it your offensive opportunity, now he did the setup for you. You have initiative, right? Versus me trying to set up and then attack, I lose initiative because I had to set up the move myself, right? But if he sets up the move by attacking me first, now I have initiative and normally you have a good upper hand on being able to finish that technique. So that's my take on it. Hopefully you guys learned something from that. Again, just like every time, if you like this, leave some comments, share them with a friend, and hopefully I'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thanks guys for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the episode. As always, please share, like, comment, all that good stuff, and help us spread the word about Breaking the Guard. And of course, visit the website, davidmma.com. Join. We actually host a podcast there as well. You might be seeing this, you know, on Spotify or some other podcast platform, but we do have the video hosted on davidmma.com, which is free to access. You don't have to enroll. So if you want to get it in video format, you can take a look at davidmma.com. Besides, that's where we have all the techniques, all the courses, all the other stuff that you've come to expect from me. You can get it at davidmma.com.